This is the House Judiciary Committee, May 17th, 1985, Subcommittee 2.
But,
you said the magic word.
Subcommittee will come to order, please. We have a busy agenda, as usual, on a Friday afternoon. However, we're going to finish by 3:30 or 4 o'clock today. I have made a commitment that first three bills in work session, we have an individual that has to be in Eugene by stated time. As soon as they work out things in the hall, we'll take those things up on work session. I think, Council, we have from Mr. Drummond's a set of amendments, an explanation, and a letter from Mr. Blair on House Bill 2998. Is that correct?
That's correct. Everybody should have them in front of them.
Not my intent to have a work session today on that measure, so if anybody is here to help us out on the work session, you are welcome to a copy of the amendments from Mr. Drummond's, as well as his argument, as well as a letter from Mr. Blair from the City of Salem. Okay, so unless there are some questions from the members and the desire to move the bill out as passed, I'd like to provide the opportunity to the parties to consider the amendments to 2998, and we have a work session hopefully on Tuesday, Council. With a smile.
Whatever you say, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions on House Bill 2998? Yes, it's Mark Henry Drummond's 5, 1785.
Is this
Mr. Drummond, I think, effectively argues that a lot of the concerns that have been raised about this bill are now taken care of through his amendments. Okay, we'll close the work session, House Bill 2998. We have Senator Bradbury here. I don't think he's appeared before our committee before. It's going to be a great experience. Is that which bill, Senator?
383.
Senator Bill 383. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you. For the record, Bill Bradbury, State Senator, District 24. I wanted to appear before you today in support of Senate Bill 383. This is a bill that I introduced at the request of Coos County. I think it affects all non-home rule counties in the state of Oregon. I have to confess that I am not an expert on this bill, but I wanted to come here and testify in favor of it because it's my understanding that the county council from Coos County was not able to come up and speak on the bill. Essentially, what it does is gives non-home rule counties civil authority as well as their current penal authority to enforce ordinances that they adopt. They still have to go through the normal court processes in the justice court, the district court, or the circuit court, but they would be able to have civil proceedings, not just penal proceedings. Those authorities already exist for cities and home rule counties, and it would simply extend that civil authority to non-home rule counties as well. I think, as far as I know, it's a fairly simple bill. It came out of the Senate Judiciary Committee without much controversy. There was one amendment added by the Senate Judiciary Committee, which provides that you find it on page 2 of the bill, subsection 4, provides that the fines, costs, or bail are defended in the civil proceeding. If that money is not paid within 60 days, then the county can basically file an order for that to be paid, and it's treated like any other judgment of a district court. It's treated as a judgment of the circuit court, and it's filed in the same manner as a judgment for the district court. You may understand the distinctions there. I personally don't, but that's the only addition the Senate made to the bill. I think it's a simple little bill, and I'd ask for your consideration.
Thank you very much. We have Mr. Snyder just walked in the room. Mr. Snyder, we're on Senate Bill 383. Do you have some testimony you want to give us on this bill?
Usually you get a cup of coffee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, but I've just been discussing the same matter with the State Court Administrator. There's some confusion about the application of it. There were some amendments proposed by Lane County that were adopted by the Senate Judiciary Committee.
That's correct.
And they were intended to authorize the filing docketing of a judgment based upon a county fine that arises out of a violation of the county ordinance. And Lane County at the time was of the opinion that there were some courts that didn't do that because they felt it was not specifically authorized. And that was the purpose from Lane County's standpoint for doing this, but I've agreed to contact Lane County right now to find out more specifically what the effect would be on the courts.
Okay. Are there questions for Mr. Snyder and Senator Bradbury? Representative Peterson.
Yes, thank you. Perhaps Mr. Snyder can answer the question. Just historically, why didn't counties or why don't counties already have this? If home rule counties can do it and cities can do it, what historically is the reason that other counties have not been?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, my understanding of this was that notwithstanding ORS 203035 that gave general law counties broad authority, that there were some judges who read the existing statutory law that's been amended now by Senate Bill 383 to preclude those counties from doing that because it was a declaration of the statewide policy. Other judges didn't have a problem with that, and it seemed that the best way to do it was to just simply clarify.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Snyder, when you had an opportunity to contact Lane County folks, would you let council know? And maybe council had asked that you might visit with Mr. Lundy and let's say council office. He's a wealth of historical information and may be able to help us out on the background of this as well. And my question is if the State Court Administrator's office wants an opportunity to comment today, but they're busy in the back chatting. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you.
Okay. Does the State Court Administrator's office want to comment on this bill at this time?
Mr. Chair, while they're coming forward, I really like this relating clause in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator, just a quick comment. Our confusion on the amendments is the requirement in there that something happens after 60 days. If these are judgments of a court, they get docketed in their judgment. There's no waiting time. And Mr. Snyder, as he mentioned, is going to check out the intent of Lane County on submitting that. We'll wait and work with him.
Did you have an opportunity to comment on these amendments on the Senate side?
No, I didn't.
Didn't have the opportunity, or you had the opportunity, didn't comment.
I did not comment.
Splitting areas. Right. All right. Further questions? Thank you very much. Anybody else want to testify on this bill?
Representative Bellamy.
Representative Bellamy?
No.
Just scratching my head. Okay, we'll close the hearing on this bill. Okay, Senate Bill, we've got nobody signed up on Senate Bill 142. It's probably either a great bill or a not so great bill.
It's like a bar bill, isn't it?
Relating to state bar memberships. Oh, Mr. Chairman, are you ready for my motion? Well, we should ask
you want to help us out on this.
Should Mr. ask Mr. Olson, Olson if here. He's ready for my motion.
Mr. Chairman, this deals with a deletion of the requirement for residency as a criterion for membership in the Oregon State Bar. It's in reference to a U.S. District Court case, Halp Keating versus Morgan, which ruled that the residence requirement was unconstitutional. And what the bill would do is codify the existing law. This passed the Senate in March 27th, 22-4.
A great relating clause, too. Okay, Representative Peterson.
Yeah, out of curiosity, does this mean that you can live in Connecticut, and if you want to come, if you pass the Oregon bar, if you want to come to Oregon in the summer and practice law, you can? Is that the practical
Correct.
Effect?
Correct.
Of
Counsel, it's my understanding or recollection that when you apply to take the bar exam, you have to check the box that says you will be or are a resident of the state of Oregon.
Correct.
If admitted. So, and this would do away with that, having to affirm to do that. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Olson with the bar. This is not put in by the bar, but it's from the Law Improvement Committee, I believe, in Legislative Council during the interim, and it is one of their housekeeping bills that would make the state law conform to the federal case on this.
There's no intent by the state bar to triple the membership dues of those that live out of state.
Well, we thought about it.
I'd say. Are there other questions, Mr. Olson? Okay. Anybody else want to testify on 142? Okay, we'll close the hearing on 142. Oh, I'm going to go 14. Oh. Senate Bill 14. Counsel?
Mr. Chairman, we have some very fine people here to testify on this. I don't want you to be too quick.
Are they from east of the mountains?
Yes.
Good part of the state?
Oh, yes.
That's quick rundown, Counsel.
Sure. This would allow certain veterans to be exempt from paying for fees as to records from the Department of Vital Statistics. And passed Senate 26-0 on February 14th.
Here we have some. We've got Klamath Falls, Jefferson County here, Washington County. Harry Ricard, is it? Richard? Klamath Falls.
I am here to discuss an amendment to Senate Bill 14, which I wasn't under the impression had been introduced. If not, do I then introduce that amendment and speak to it?
We have it in our packet, Rocky.
Thank you.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
My name is Perry Ricard. I'm the Health Services Administrator for Klamath County, and I am testifying in favor of amending Senate Bill 14 to allow county registrars to prepare, issue, and retain certified copies of original vital copies. Current vital record statutes require the state registrar to designate county registrars whose functions include accepting, reviewing for completeness, and making certified copies of birth and death records submitted to them by funeral homes, hospitals, and individuals who choose home births. Abstracts from these records are prepared and kept at the county. Every 7 to 10 days, the original birth and death records are sent to the state registrar, who also reviews them for completeness, and then takes possession of the documents. During the week to 10 days, the county registrar has the original record, a certified copy may be produced and issued by the registrar. Once the original is sent to the state, the county registrar is prohibited from issuing any more certified copies. Those requesting copies then must send off to Portland. The state registrar's office is currently taking 4 to 6 weeks to respond to requests for certified copies. Their long-range goal is to hope to be able to reduce the turnaround time to 2 weeks, although there are no guarantees. County registrars take about 5 to 10 minutes to respond to walk-in requests and a business day to requests received by mail. Amending the applicable statute, as suggested, would permit county registrars to keep a copy of the original record, certify that copy so they can be accepted as an original, and distribute them upon request. The county registrar would still be required to submit all originals to Portland within current timelines, yet could provide immediate service to those needing birth and death copies. As an example, Klamath County now receives approximately 3 to 5 requests a week, which must be referred to Portland, and we receive just about the same number of complaints about why it's taking so long for these individuals to get their copies. This amendment would not conflict with any other vital statistics statutes, as ORS 432030-8 allows delegation of state registrar functions and duties to county registrars, as is now happening, NORS 432115 authorizes reproductions to be accepted as original records.
Questions from the committee members? I guess Representative Burke.
Do you charge?
There's a $5 fee which is set by the state.
If this bill, if I understand it correctly, deletes the fee.
No, it does
from
not.
The schedule.
No, it does not delete the fee schedule. What this
well,
bill
okay, then I don't, excuse me, I don't, okay. Maybe I need help from the staff here. If I understand this, the staff analysis that came over from the Senate, who obviously don't do as good a work as our own committee staff, says ORS establishes the fees for a variety of vital statistics. There's no provision for waiving the fee. Wasn't that the effect of the original bill? Was the purpose of it here, I understood, requires state register of vital statistics to provide certified copy of vital records without
That's
charge. So the intent of this is to limit the charge for veterans' records. What I'm wondering is if that affects,
yeah.
If this, by adding your amendment, also would affect the fee charged, since I don't know where I'm. You know where I'm getting?
Yeah, I know exactly
good.
Where.
Okay.
No, the amendment does not deal with Section 1 or Section 2 of the bill. The amendment would allow health departments to keep a certified copy past that 10-day period, so that when the veterans come in and ask for copies, we can produce that copy for them at the health department, as opposed to them sending off to Portland and waiting for anywhere from 2 to 6
I understand
years.
It. I just want to know if it would have any effect on the fee that
no,
you're allowed to charge
no.
or if it has any effect.
No, it has no effect on fees whatsoever.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you
for driving up here today. I think we have to temporarily close the hearing on Senate Bill 14 so we can go to a work session on the first three bills. That I've listed. I think Mr. Grant has to be in Eugene shortly. So I'd like to move up to 2359 at this point. We will return in a few minutes to Senate Bill 14. Should have an amendment from offered by either the 1,000 Friends of the State Bar. Is that well? It's part of today's packet. We have an amendment that apparently, at least the amendment before us, LC 2359-1, the State Bar and 1,000 Friends came to an agreement and.
Yes.
Now, is there additional change of language?
No further changes. I think everybody's agreeable.
Mr. Donica?
I don't know what that is.
And Mr. Neal have also given their affirmation to the amendments. Questions from the committee?
I wonder if I might ask for a brief explanation again of what this does.
Okay. The land use disclaimer, as it's presently in effect, does not have a validating provision that says if you omit it in an instrument that your instrument is still valid and enforceable. What that does is especially in large commercial transactions, raise the possibility of extremely large malpractice situations for attorneys where they inadvertently omit to include it, and then the buyer could back out of the deal based on claiming a rescission right because it was an invalid instrument, it's not enforceable, and essentially have a free option to walk away from the transaction if things don't go the way he likes. So what we have done is add a third section to 93040 that limits any rescission right to those persons who would not have signed the instrument if the disclaimer had been in there. In other words, the person that is ignorant of the land use laws and would have learned something by the disclaimer being in there. It would not allow a claim by a sophisticated commercial buyer that knows all about the land use laws and would have signed the instrument even if the disclaimer had been there. Then we did modify the language of the disclaimer itself slightly so as to make it consistent with warranties which are often included in commercial transactions regarding land use rights. It's very common to warrant that the property has certain land use rights or certain zoning. And so it was important to not have this statutory disclaimer be contrary to those kind of warranties.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Bellamy.
Can you explain sub 3 again?
Okay. Let me give you an example. It's required right now that you state in a real estate instrument the true consideration. And in that section of the statute, it says if you inadvertently forget to state it, your instrument is still valid and enforceable. There's no similar provision in the law right now on this land use disclaimer. So that if you had a multi-million dollar commercial transaction and you forgot to put this disclaimer in, I'm convinced that the courts would allow the buyer to simply walk away from the transaction and say that the seller has no remedy because he forgot to put that disclaimer in his instrument. That would be true even though the person was totally familiar with the land use laws and knew what the property could be used for, and it would be notwithstanding the fact that the disclaimer would have made no difference even if it was included. And so we've put 3 in to limit any remedy for omitting the disclaimer to those situations where it would have made a difference. In other words, the only person that could make a claim for leaving out the disclaimer is the person that could say, if I had seen that disclaimer, I wouldn't have signed that instrument. I didn't realize that I couldn't use that property to build my home on. I thought if I got this deed, that meant I could build my house. And that person should have a claim. They should be able to do something about it if they didn't have that disclaimer in there to warn them. But there shouldn't be an option for the buyer to walk away in a large commercial transaction where he's a sophisticated buyer and understands the land use laws.
President Bellamy? Further questions?
One quick question. When you say the body of an instrument transferring or contracting to transfer fee title, the contracting to transfer could be the earnest money agreement, couldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. You have to have it in the earnest money agreement, that's right.
Yes. Representative Peters.
Mr. Chair, I would move the amendments to House Bill 2359-1.
Representative Peterson moves Legislative Council Amendments 2359-1 to House Bill 2359. Discussion? Any objection? Motion adopted. Representative Peterson.
I would move amendment to House Bill 2359 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Peterson moves House Bill 2359 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk will call the roll, please.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Winger?
Aye.
Petsky?
Aye. Motion adopted. 2361. Packet here with a few amendments. Is that
Ms. Chippers, may I explain?
Council,
this
please.
Bill was up last Friday, and you had in front of you the Hannon Gross copy of 2361 with the 2361-1 amendments. Those were the Keith Burns amendments that represented the financial services. At the first meeting, Mr. Grant had suggested a simple amendment on page 2 line 21 of the original bill, and you have in front of you, yourselves today a hand engrossed copy of Mr. Grant's amendment alone. It's just adding three words, not including interest, on page 2, line 21, after the word installments.
So we should be looking at...
Either one. It's really up to the... None of the amendments have been accepted. Either... Mr. Grant's or Mr. Burns' amendments have not been accepted.
Representative Springer.
Just briefly, I don't know if I've heard Mr. Grant's response to the Burns Cosgrove amendments, or if I have, I've forgotten.
Okay, those amendments were jointly produced by the real estate section and Mr. Cosgrove working together, because the real estate section approved the concept of reversing the result of the Brewer case and making some other housekeeping amendments in the bill. And so they are a joint product. Would you like me to explain the purpose of those amendments?
Well, I don't know if other members feel comfortable. I may have missed part of the discussion at another hearing, so I don't want to hold this up.
What's the pleasure of the committee? Are Representative Bellamy, you're comfortable with the amendments? Representative Burton?
Well, I guess I need to try to understand your, Mr. Grant, your amendment, which is this one mark 517 sub 2, is in lieu of the other amendments.
No, it's in addition.
It's in addition. Okay. Well, yeah, I'm comfortable with amendments. I was, because yeah, I thought that section that you're amending was already amended out.
I don't believe so. That last amendment that I offered at the last hearing was one that had been requested by the Association of Oregon Realtors, and it had just inadvertently been omitted from the Cosgrove amendments.
Well, let me see. Can you give me a second? Sure.
Okay. I'm sorry if I missed this. I see in the 517 amendments on page 2 we're saying for purposes of this section, purchase price is defined, and we have new language there, not including interest. But then when we define purchase price in the Burns Cosgrove amendments, we don't have that language.
We don't have what?
I don't see the language that says not including interest.
Right, that's because it's an amendment that should be in addition to the Cosgrove amendments. It was inadvertently omitted from the Cosgrove amendments.
Okay, I'm sorry, fine. So wherever we use purchase price for purposes of this bill, that addition, not including interest, goes there.
Right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Burton.
Let me make sure I'm working off the right two pieces of paper. The Burns Cosgrove amendments are 510 sub 2.
That's correct.
All right. The amendment that Mr. Grant has made is to section 3 sub 4. Is that correct? The only amendment that says handwritten in there. And in my Burns Cosgrove, that section's been deleted.
Okay, what they did, may I say, Representative Burt, what they did when they drafted LCMM 2361-1, there was concerns about definitions. They redefined some of the sections and they moved sections around. So that one section, section 4, is now section 1.
Section 1,
section
sub 4.
Section 1, sub 3.
Sub 3.
Okay, I just want to make sure, I guess. We're going to adopt amendments, so can we move his over this one? So
sure.
Okay. Understand then. It's a matter of cut and paste.
Okay. Did you have another question? Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I think I am going to ask briefly what the Burns Cosgrove amendments do. If you would go through that again, please.
Yeah, it'll only take a minute.
Okay.
The Brewer case involved a junior lien on a vendee's interest. In other words, the buyer of property on a contract borrowed some money and put a trust deed, or I don't remember what it was, but some form of a lien against his vendee's interest. This is a very common thing, for instance, with weatherization loans. It's done all the time. the Oregon real estate bar has always assumed that a lien on a vendee's interest would be treated the same as a junior lien on a trust deed, a junior lien on a fee title interest, that there would really be no difference. In other words, it'd be treated the same as a second trustee would be where there's a senior trustee. The Brewer case in the Court of Appeals was decided the way that the majority of the real estate bar thought was appropriate. But then it went to the Supreme Court and was reversed. And the Supreme Court held that if a vendee abandons his interest and gives a quitclaim back to the seller, that automatically wipes out all the junior interest without any notice, without any remedy whatsoever. And as whether that was the right law or not doesn't matter. It creates a horrible practical problem because there are so many junior liens on vendee's interest floating around.
I think I asked you this question before, but if you could refresh my memory on the effective date, if this will go to any contracts currently in existence.
That's right, any existing contracts, so that we solve the problem.